Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm Laurel Nimi, your host for The Wildlife, and also author of Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensic Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk about common terns and land conservation with Chris Boguette, Executive Director of the Lake Champlain Land Trust. The common tern is a striking-looking water bird. Adults have white heads with black crowns, white breasts, light gray backs, and white wings with dark tips. Their tails are long and deeply forked, and their bills are blood red with a black tip. They're a medium-sized bird, about 13 to 16 inches long, with a wingspan of twice that, about 31 inches. The common tern is a graceful flyer. It skims over the water with deliberate wing beats, with its head turned down at a right angle to its body. It can hover when it sights a fish, and then it will dive headfirst after its prey, dropping suddenly and quickly from the sky. Common terns like to nest in colonies or big groups on rocky islands, barrier islands, and salt marshes. That way, they're close to their feeding areas and also protected from predators. That's important because these birds nest in the open and on bare ground. They rarely nest under cover, and on average, their nest sites have more than 90% visibility from above. Common terns breed in North America all along the Atlantic coast, from the northern maritime provinces of Canada to South Carolina, and occasionally in the Gulf of Mexico or on large inland lakes. In the winter, they migrate all the way south toward Brazil, Peru, and even Argentina. Common terns are the most widespread tern in North America. However, in many states, they're threatened or endangered. In the early 1900s, common terns, like other bird species, were almost extirpated by hunters for use on women's hats. Because of their small size, whole common terns were often stuffed and placed on the top of hats. This, combined with the decimation of other bird species, led to several federal laws to protect these migratory birds, most notably the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, which prohibits the taking of birds, their nests, and their eggs. Because of this protective legislation, common terns made a comeback in the 1920s and 1930s. However, that changed. Habitat loss from either human activities, erosion, or even gulls and other critters taking over led to the concentration of colonies on a smaller number of suitable nesting sites. Hence, more and more often, common terns were nesting at marginal locations where the quality of their habitat was low and the risk of predation from raccoons, skunks, possums, gulls, and even ants is high. In Vermont's Lake Champlain Basin, for example, the number of common terns dropped from almost 400 nesting pairs in the 1960s to only 50 in 1988. As a result, in 1989, the common tern was placed on the state of Vermont's endangered species list. While nationally, common terns are not listed as an endangered or threatened species, many individual states, including Vermont, New York, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania, have classified them as such. Common terns are sensitive to disturbing during the breeding season. As you'll hear, the adults will attack human intruders in the nesting colonies, often striking them on the head with their bills. The problem is that the more they have to protect their chicks from intruders, the less time and energy they have to care for their young. The Lake Champlain Land Trust recognized that problem early on and, since 1978, has worked to permanently conserve and protect several important common tern nesting islands in Lake Champlain. It started by reaching out to the landowners of the few islands with nesting common terns and educating them about the value of the birds and the problems they face. The Lake Champlain Land Trust then led the effort to purchase and protect the only possible island habitats for terns. Through the protection of breeding habitat, along with continual monitoring and management efforts of its partners at the Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife, Green Mountain Audubon Society, and Audubon Vermont, the story of the common tern is now one of Vermont's greatest wildlife conservation victories. Common tern numbers have soared by over 300% in Vermont, from just 50 breeding pairs at the end of the 1980s to close to 200 today. My guest, Chris Boguette, is the Executive Director of the Lake Champlain Land Trust. The mission of the Lake Champlain Land Trust is to save the scenic beauty, natural communities, and recreational amenities of Lake Champlain by permanently preserving significant islands, shoreline areas, and natural communities in the Champlain region. Chris Boguette has more than 20 years of experience in land conservation, including positions with the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board, the Vermont Land Trust, and the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy. Before becoming executive director of the Lake Champlain Land Trust, he served as their director of land protection and also as assistant director. Chris has extensive experience with landowner outreach and education. He received a Master of Science degree in Natural Resource Planning from the University of Vermont and an undergraduate degree in Biology from the College of William and Mary. When we spoke, I asked Chris to tell me about common terns.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. A common tern is an amazing water bird that you've probably seen if you've been out on Lake Champlain or along the coast, Atlantic coast. They hover before diving in for their primary food, which is fish. And while it is common, has a wide range, it is actually considered endangered here in Vermont due to its limited breeding habitat.
How big is it? Is it bigger than my fist?
Typically 12 inches in length and around 30 inches in wingspan. So when you're on the water, it's about half as big as a herring gull and still slightly smaller than an American crow.
What color is it?
The breeding adults have a gray upper body and light gray or white belly, a very characteristic black cap on the head and the neck, and the sharp, thin orange-red bill and orange-red legs. The long wings have black on the tips, and they also have elongated outer tail feathers that form a fork.
Can you see the fork when you're on the ground and they're flying above you?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we have great pictures of the adults and the kids on our website, too, so we can send people there if they want to see pictures.
Oh, so where are the pictures? It's on your website, is the lclt.org, is that right?
That's right, lclt.org for Lake Champlain Land Trust.
Okay. So what kind of fish do they eat?
Mostly small fish, because they're on the smaller side for the birds. So they're looking for, they can dive in and plunge down and get small forms of, the fish that we find on Lake Champlain.
Given that you're the land trust for Lake Champlain Land Trust, why are you even interested in this bird?
Well, we really want to protect all the biodiversity of Lake Champlain, and the common tern numbers really crashed. They went from 400 breeding pairs in the 60s to only 50 or so in 1988. So for years, the Lake Champlain Land Trust was originally named the Lake Champlain Islands Trust. And one of our primary missions early on was educating landowners of these small, unique islands about the common terns. So we put up signs educating curious boat owners that approaching or landing during the summer breeding season could really harm the common terns that are nesting on these islands. They're nesting in a colonial fashion on these very small islands. And someone coming up and disturbing them can really change what's happening on the island.
So can you describe Lake Champlain? Because listeners, this show is broadcast on a radio station in Burlington, Vermont, but it also goes out as a podcast, and there are 35 or more different countries represented with subscribers. So just to describe Lake Champlain a little bit to get people aware of what it is Lake Champlain is actually the sixth largest body of fresh water in the United States, and only the Great Lakes are larger. It's 120 miles long and 12 miles wide at its widest point. And in it, there are over 70 islands and 600 miles of shoreline. The deepest point is 400 feet, and the average depth is about 64 feet. And it's bounded on the west with the Adirondack Mountains of New York, on the east by the Green Mountains of Vermont, and it flows north from Whitehall, New York, to the St. Lawrence River in Quebec. A lot of people, in fact, close to 200,000 people, rely on Lake Champlain for their drinking water. And Lake Champlain is also a wonderful place for recreation. There's, you know, thousands of motorboats and sailboats and commercial vessels, swimmers, windsurfers, kayakers, even scuba divers on the lake. The lake is also a major breeding area and stopping point for spring and fall birds migrating along the Atlantic Flyway. So, Chris, tell me more about the lake. What does it look like?
Well, I'm a little biased because I believe it's the most beautiful lake in the world.
Well, so am I, but this. But we can be biased because we're Vermonters. So.
It's a freshwater lake. It extends north in a north-south orientation from the top of the United States, where it actually runs into Quebec, down through New York. And it's a elongated island and elongated lake and deep in many places, but it has shallow bays. The rivers from largely the Vermont side, but also the New York side of the entire Champlain Valley, kind of drain into this beautiful lake. And then it flows north through a river, which is undammed, up into the St. Lawrence River and out to sea from there. So it really is a spectacular island lake in that you're all along the valley and even the ridgetops along the Green Mountains in Vermont. You're looking over and can see this island, in this lake, between the Adirondacks and the Green Mountains.
And then in the lake, there are these little islands, and some are bigger islands.
Yeah, we have all sorts of islands. You know, one of the first things we did as a nonprofit, we originally called the Lake Champlain Islands Trust. So one of the things we did early on was kind of inventory all the islands in the lake. And of the 70 islands, there were these unique small ones that were basically rocks. And they have very shallow soils on them and not a lot of vegetation. And that is the breeding habitat of the common tern. So they have these nesting, like we said, colonial nesting colonies of adults raising their young on these island habitats without a lot of other species on the islands. So that was the primary function for these islands. And so the population of the common tern was always rare here because of that limited habitat, but it was so important to protect these islands, and we talked earlier that we got involved because that was a clear early priority. You know, they were only going to nest on these islands, not other places. So these islands were developed or in some way changed or mismanaged. That would prevent the common tern from nesting there every summer and make a real difference to the population here in Vermont. So they're actually endangered in Vermont because of the low numbers, both from fledglings and from breeding pairs that are here. They have very strong site fidelity. They come back here every year. So they migrate away and they come back every summer to breed here in Lake Champlain on these specific islands we're talking about.
Where do they go? They're only here in the summertime?
Yeah, April, May, they come up here. They're in the Americas, they're, you know, migrating up from Central and South America. That's their winter range. And they'll breed in the summer southern half of Canada and the very northern parts of the United States. But ours are breeding, as I said, only in the islands of Lake Champlain, nowhere else in Vermont. So,
are they in New York as well and Maine?
Yes, they're actually very common over their range. It's just they're endangered here in Vermont because of this limited breeding habitat for them. That's why the small islands were so important, and that's why we worked so hard to educate owners.
Why do they like these islands?
So the islands are largely very conducive to the terns because they lack woody vegetation. So that makes it easier for the adults to fly in and out. They're constantly fishing and bringing the fish back to the nests. And it also prevents perch sites for some of their predators. And they basically want a barren landscape. They want this barren landscape where they can kind of just scrape together a nest right on these rocks. So these rocks, again, these islands are in the middle of the lake, so they're away from fox or other predators that might, you know, predate the nest if they were on the mainland, but these island habitats are very conducive for this. And then as a group, they can kind of protect the nest, you know, create a racket and really fly up and deter some species, although other species will come and affect the nest when they're breeding there.
So when you said they're colonial breeders, what do you mean by that?
Just they're going to be packed in that island. A whole colony of common tern adults will have their certain nest and then be within 2 feet of another nest. We're talking about hundreds of nests on an island less than an acre.
And so what predators do they have? Do they have any predators?
Yeah, they still have, and to this day, we still have problems with great horned owls will come over at night and black-crowned night herons. And so, you know, the adults will protect their gene pool, so they will fly off the nest, and therefore the owls and the night herons can eat both eggs and chicks, unfortunately.
What do the chicks look like? I've seen pictures of them. They're really super-duper cute.
I was just going to say, are we allowed to say they're cute? They're very cute. They're kind of fluffy. They're covered with thick down, and their backs and wings are gray-brown and spotted or streaked with black. They also have a little white belly. And we've named our little Rocky. We've named our little baby common tern picture Rocky. You know, Rocky is the common tern.
How big are the babies?
Well, you know, the eggs are about 2.5, 2 inches in size, and they'll come out of that egg, you know, pretty close to what you might see from, say, a duck, about that same size egg. And then they grow pretty fast. I mean, they're fledging in, you know, a couple months, so they're off and getting their wing feathers together pretty quick in the summer.
When will they start leaving the islands?
Yeah, they'll migrate away in the fall. So they're there all summer, and then they'll migrate in the fall.
You had mentioned that they're special because of their flight, that they hover before they dive. Can you describe why they do that? What are they doing?
Yeah, their primary food source is fish. So they've evolved to be able to hover above the surface of the water and then dive straight down and catch the fish with that sharp bill. But when they're not hovering, they're described often as a graceful flyer, very light in the wind. So if you've been on a water surface, these water birds are pretty common, and you really admire those graceful flyers as they fly along. And then all of a sudden, they'll just stop, hover, and dive straight down.
Straight down, huh?
Yeah, a couple of feet off the water, and they'll just dive straight down, and you'll see a silvery fish right there in their bill. So it's a fascinating process to watch.
And then do they take it back to the islands to eat?
Yes, of course, yep. Or... Yep. A lot. The baby birds need a lot of food.
Oh, really? So
They'll also eat aquatic invertebrates more.
How many birds are there in Vermont of the common tern?
So we've done a lot of work. You know, the numbers crashed, and now there's between, you know, getting close to the goal of The recovery goal was 300 pairs, so we're getting very close to that. It's somewhere around 200 breeding pairs now.
Oh, wow. So tell me what Lake Champlain Land Trust has done, starting from the very beginning, to protect these birds or to protect the islands in general.
Early on, our efforts were meeting the landowners, telling them what unique habitats these were, and making sure they just understood what unique inhabitants they had there. So it was a matter of talking to the landowners and reaching out to them and saying, look, there's a really important, unique ecological treasure nesting on your island. These are privately owned islands. So we knew there was only a handful of islands that were appropriate for them. We wanted to reach out to those landowners and just let them know, first of all, what they had, and second of all, could they help us deter the boaters? They were all great about that. And so early on, we were putting up signs. I actually still have these large signs in our closet down here in our office in the old Burlington train station. And, you know, we're trying to simply warn and educate the boaters. They didn't know. They were, you know, driving up to the islands and parking in the summer or circling around, you know, curious about the hundreds of terns circling the islands. But, of course, as those adults are flying up off the nest, they're using a lot of energy to deter the boaters and maybe even dive at the boaters and not fishing or protecting the young or the nest. So the signs became an educational outreach for us, and then later the signs were replaced with buoys that are anchored on the four corners that kind of created a safety zone and buffer the island. So, and then, of course, we have better enforcement actions and better laws for protecting endangered species like this.
So the main reason that these populations had plummeted was because of nuisance boaters disturbing their nesting site?
Well, they definitely have the predation issues, you know, across time. So man's influence is that, if the boaters are disturbing the adults from these islands, their nesting success is coming down. They're fledging less chicks off these islands. We also have the DDT phenomenon back in the 60s. We think that toxic egg, you know, thinning of the eggs also contributed to part of their crash. So we have the threat from the owls, the night herons. There's actually ants, ironically, that can bother the chicks.
In fact, in researching for this interview, I was looking things up about predators, and I had read that these tiny thief ants enter the nest from below and then feed on the newly hatched chicks or the eggs and then cause the nest failure. And in fact, I found one study in 1991. It had killed 20 out of 27 chicks and eggs.
I don't know the details, but it's thief ant. They can go in there and bother the eggs or the chick. Both can be an issue. So man's probably influenced all these factors. You know, we probably have created habitat more conducive for owls and night herons near these islands. We have these limited pockets where they're breeding in these colonies, and then boaters are coming along and disturbing them. So we have this combination of factors along with the toxic chemicals that really cause a crash for these terns. And they became endangered because there was a recognition of this.
And like you said earlier, their numbers had declined rapidly, especially during the 1970s and 1980s, and they reached a low of 50 pairs in 1988. Then in 1989, they were actually put on the Vermont State Endangered Species List.
We did something else well. Then, of course, after education and reaching out to the landowners, and the landowners deserve a lot of praise for responding to our educational outreach.
What was the
what land trusts do is, let's go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, what was the reaction? Were people pretty receptive?
People are very receptive. You know, it's a matter of educating and telling how important these islands are, how unique it is to have these birds nesting on their islands. So they had a great deal of pride in helping us protect these islands. So we did the signs and we did the outreach to the landowners. And then part of it was sometimes it's a matter of, can we best protect them? So two of the landowners, you know, due to this good relationship with the Lake Champlain Land Trust, donated the islands to us. So that's what land trusts do. So we protect island habitat, we protect lakeshore habitat, we protect natural areas all up and down Lake Champlain. So it's very natural for us. This is actually all three of our priorities kind of in the same spot, these colonial nesting islands. So we worked with them over the years, hosting the signs and educating the boaters. And then two of the landowners donated their islands outright to the Lake Champlain Land Trust. So Otis Arisman gave us Grandma's Island in 1997. That's in the town of Grand Isle, just off the larger Butler Island. And it serves as a key reserve island and have had nesting common terns before that period of time and since. And then our former board chair, Mary Haas, donated Upper Fishbladder Island to us in 2000. And this was a historic nesting site and another backup island. And then we joined forces with Rod Valley and the Georgia Conservation Commission to raise money and purchase Rock Island in Georgia. That's in the St. Albans Bay, and that was in 1999. And so Rock Island in Georgia has been basically number 1A as far as the number of fledglings raised each year. And then number 1B is probably Papa Squash Island off the shore of St. Albans. And that was bought by our partner at the Green Mountain Audubon Society. And then Hen Island is owned by our partners at the Nature Conservancy. And then the terns have also nested on a tiny rock known as Gull Rock, and a larger privately owned island named Savage Island. So those are kind of the islands, and so you can see most of them are protected permanently.
Do the birds move around? What makes these islands special?
That's a great question. That's exactly the problem. They have very strong site fidelity. So they're coming back here year after year. You know, we have evidence that they've been using these islands since it's recorded in 1892. So they've probably been using these same islands for eons, and since the young are raised on these islands, they're going to want to come back to the same islands. That's why it's so important to protect them so they can come back summer after summer and kind of come back to their home. They can be pulled over to other islands. So Grandma's Island, they've actually used decoys and called over, and they've had some success with bringing adults over there. We want to spread them out. We don't really want them on two primary islands and a bunch of backups. We'd like to spread them out amongst these protected islands if we could.
So how do you spread them out? Has it been successful?
Yeah, so the decoys, the calls, worked. It's something that they've used in Maine for puffins. And so they called them over with their call and convinced them to come over and, hey, look, that's pretty good real estate. And they didn't know it's conserved and protected by the Lake Champlain Land Trust. But, you know, they're not going to get harassed there. And so, I'm sure, this is a pretty nice spot. I like this spot. All right, maybe we should come back here next year. That's the goal, try to spread out the colony amongst us.
You had mentioned a number of the islands, Rock Island, Hen Island, Gull Rock, Savage Islands. Those are all protected, or they're still not protected, the places where they are?
Yeah, so Rock Island in Georgia was one that we bought in 1999. So Rock Island in Georgia is the biggest colony. That has the most breeding success every year. And then Audubon bought Papa Squash. These are all less than an acre. These are small rock islands. Grandma's Island was donated to us in 1997 by Otis Erisman. Upper Fishbladder Island was donated to us by Mary Haas in 2000. And then Hen Island is owned by the Nature Conservancy. It's another small one-acre island. Gull Rock's is a tiny spit of land, and they use a small portion of the larger Savage Island. So the only one really not protected is Savage, and that they could nest at several spots on that much larger private island.
Why is it so important to buy the land and protect the land? Why not keep it just in private hands?
Well, private owners can be terrific stewards of the land, and in many cases, this is a great example, the families that own these islands were very helpful to this larger cause. But we prioritize purchasing essential, irreplaceable natural areas that can protect, that we could not protect through a donated easement or donated land. So our first choice is, well, the landowners donate an easement, donate the development rights to us, and then they could hold on to the island and do what they want with the island and help us protect whatever's there. Obviously, if the entire island is covered with birds that we want to protect, it's hard for them to donate an easement on that. So another mechanism is they could donate the island outright. So then we would then own the island. And so that's what happened on those two islands. And, folks think that state parks and state forests just magically survive intense development pressure in an area. But, land trusts are key in rallying our members and our donors to work with the landowners and see if they want to voluntarily sell the land or donate an easement on the land or donate the land. And in some cases, we just outright buy the land. We want to conserve everything. We just want to conserve key areas like Common Tern Nesting Island. So we purchased Rock Island in Georgia in 1999. We just raised money from the community, and our donors and our members were very supportive of this effort. So that's a key mechanism for how land trusts work.
Take me through the process from identifying that as something you'd want to protect, say Rock Island as something you'd want to protect, to how do you go about raising the funds and then actually making the deal?
We constantly identify undeveloped pieces of Lakeshore and Lake Champlain that might be in the public interest to protect. As I said, we don't need to or want to protect everything, but we think there's key areas that we want to create a balance, places for recreation or places to protect biodiversity. And so when we identify those priorities, I think first off is, why are we protecting it? So if we're protecting it for common terns, there's not a lot else that we want to happen there other than the birds to have free access to the nest and not have the public interfering or disrupting this very sensitive area. So that's a good place for donors to either donate the land or we can purchase the land. So if the landowner is willing to sell it to us, then we come up with a sale price that's fair based on appraisal, and we go to the community and say, we think this is very valuable. So Rock Island in Georgia, we joined forces with the Georgia Conservation Commission and did a fundraising campaign and said, please help us protect this island. And Vermonters respond to that. They understand how rare it is to have these areas that are occasionally up for sale and have critical habitat, and we have an opportunity, and we've signed a purchase and sale to buy this island. So they'll respond to that, and we've had great luck. The problem is that there's not as much public funding as there should be for all the natural areas that we could protect right now, and that's a key issue when looking forward for protecting wildlife, is how do we get the additional monies to protect some of these very important habitats that are being developed as we speak.
Then once you purchase the land, do you continue to own the islands? Sort of what's happened since Lake Champlain Land Trust bought the island?
So we managed the islands for a while with cooperating organizations such as Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife, who are key in protecting the common terns. Mark Labar, a former board member at Audubon, was really helpful and instrumental in working on all this entire project. And so we bought the islands, and then we decided that we would retain a conservation easement to forever protect the islands to make sure they would never be developed or disturbed. And then we donated the islands outright to the Green Mountain Audubon Society. And that's a common partnership for us. You know, we need to concentrate on conserving additional habitat for common terns or many other imperiled wildlife species. And, you know, there's hundreds of critical habitat areas that I just said, you know, to protect our fish nurseries, to protect heron rookeries, rare beach plants, essential lakeside floodplain forests, rare spiny softshell turtle nesting beaches. I mean, hopefully I'll come back some other time and do a show about all these other wildlife priorities.
It sure seems like there's a lot.
So there's a lot to do. So we're not always going to own them and manage them, and that's why I encourage folks when they're walking in their state park, Niquette Bay State Park, or Eagle Mountain Natural Area in Milton. Those are areas that the Lake Champlain Land Trust helped protect, and we donated them to state and town, respectively, in those two cases, so that we could focus on the next protection priority.
So then currently, how are the islands managed? What happens if I want to go there? Can I? Clearly, I shouldn't because I'm going to be disturbing the terns. But what would
exactly,
I...
yeah.
you know,
yeah, we don't encourage people to go nearby. And it's not really a conflict with boaters because, you know, we're talking about small one-acre islands and a little safety zone around them. You know, there's plenty of lake to boat around. So we don't encourage people to go visit these islands, especially in the summer when they're breeding. Just be happy and take a pride that these are protecting, and this is an amazing success story. The rebound has been incredible. You know, there's 195 breeding pairs in 2005. The numbers go up and down every year, but, you know, we're talking about a major success story. But that's because people have stayed away from them. The Vermont State Police has done a great job of deterring people from going in there. They're endangered now, so that status gives them some protection. And, you know, I should say Mark and his crew do a great job of giving the terns a boost. They've created really helpful improvements like adding wooden chick shelters, ant traps, fishing line to deter the gulls, removing the gull nests if they get in there. Just, you know, they've done a terrific job of managing these islands, and for us, we're just glad that this is such a success story.
And it is a success story. I know one of the latest counts in 2007 said there were 170 nesting pairs, and also that there were 5 nesting pairs on the Grammys Island, and the first fledgling from that island in more than 35 years. Now, do other birds, you mentioned about deterring gulls, is that a problem with other birds coming to nest on those sites, like gulls or cormorants?
Yeah, there's a larger issue behind the gulls because obviously we've created additional habitat for the gulls with our landfills and our, you know, Al's French Fries of the world, the local restaurant here. You know, we have some sites where gulls can be a bigger population than they have been historically because of our influence. So then they can come into these common tern islands and cause a real competition issue. So they will remove gull nests from these islands.
Are the common terns nesting on all 3 of those islands, or is Rock Island really the main?
Yeah, Rock Island in Georgia is the and of course they change. This is nature. They're, you know, going to influence back and forth because of different conditions. But Grandma's Island is a kind of backup, and Rock Island in Georgia and Papa Squash are the two main nesting islands right now. But that will change over time, and that's why we want to protect all these islands, because who knows what influences will change. Maybe climate change will change the vegetation such that other islands are more important.
Now, if people do want to see these, do you have like a webcam or something on the island? So, or do you have photos? Where could they go for information about common terns?
We don't have a webcam. That's a good idea.
Yeah, why don't you put one
we
up?
We have... we would gladly accept donations and sponsorships for a webcam, and people can contact us about making that technology happen. Right now, we have a nature snapshot about common terns, and I think the larger nature snapshot would be of interest to folks. If you go to our website and look for nature snapshots, you will find a Rock Island, Georgia snapshot. So it shows you not only the common tern, but other species in and around that island. I think that's a great way to learn about these small, unique island habitats.
And just to clarify, when you say Georgia, you're talking about Georgia, not the state of Georgia, because here we are in Vermont, but the community, the Georgia, which is a community within Vermont.
Right. There's a beautiful lakeshore community north of Colchester and Milton along the shore of Lake Champlain, named Georgia, not the southern Georgia, but our own Georgia. And Rock Island in Georgia is in the middle of St. Albans Bay, which is a very beautiful little bay up there. It's very close to our Mill River Falls natural area, which empties into St. Albans Bay right off the Lakeshore Road there.
If you were to visit, which I'm not encouraging anyone to do, you had mentioned when we were talking earlier that you'd really need a helmet. Why is that?
Yes. Yes. The parents are very protective, and they will dive at you with great interest in deterring you, and they have very sharp beaks, and you definitely want a hard hat. We do research, limited research, where we're, you know, we need to ban the chicks and do numbers and census and all. So when researchers are out there, they have to wear hard hats, and you just want to hold a clipboard up or something, because the parents will dive bomb at the human intruders and try to get them away. And obviously we want to do the research without bothering them too much, but brief visits are very appropriate.
So tell me how much land Lake Champlain Land Trust has saved.
We have, thanks to our members and volunteers, saved 6,000 acres of critical wildlife habitat up and down Lake Champlain. And almost all of it is full of very important biodiversity for Lake Champlain. We're up to 19 miles of shoreline and 16 islands, not just these common tern islands, but other islands as well. And so we've worked with landowners who want to protect the part of the land they're not using. You know, they've donated an easement on part of their lakeshore, and they actually have a camp or home on the property. But because we don't invite the public, it's a very great wildlife habitat protection method. Or there are public access areas. As I said earlier, we might buy a farm in South Hero and turn it into Round Pond State Park, where people can come and hike anytime they want and hike down to the lakeshore and skip stones and see hundreds of frogs and dozens of snakes. And we know the habitat for the least bittern in that marsh. It's going to be hard to see, but you know, these are the wildlife habitat protections that we're concentrating on throughout the lake.
Why is protecting land so important?
You know, there's many reasons to protect land. If we go beyond the land's ability to provide clean air and clean water and buffer the lake that we all enjoy, you know, recreating in and around, you know, wildlife habitats, we're losing the type of natural habitats that we've always had. So if you really want to go birding, go fishing, or go hunting on the natural landscape, we better work really fast, because the undeveloped, untouched natural areas are going fast. As I said before, I don't believe that we need to protect every piece of land. We have a really small window to create a balance, to save a fraction of the areas being developed, even in Vermont. There's development pressures, and great habitats that a lot of people would agree are paramount to protect are being lost. And it could be a key wildlife corridor connecting several things together, or it could be an area where people want to recreate in a natural beauty that gets you away from the rat race and not just a bike path next to a school, you know. And then if we really want our kids to enjoy porcupine and bobcats and common terns.
How much do you want them to enjoy porcupine? No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I'll change that.
I have images of a friend's dog, you know, with porcupine's spikes, quills sticking out of its mouth.
Okay,
anyway.
wait.
No, you don't have to amend
something.
That.
That's all right.
No, I enjoy seeing bobcat in my backyard, so.
Okay, so what we have here in the Champlain Valley is a very beautiful and relatively undeveloped area, but that does not mean that we haven't cut down the hedgerows that connect two parcels together or put grass all the way up to the river's edge, whereas a larger river buffer would be key for wide-ranging species. So you can come down to my office and see some historic maps of Vermont and Lake Champlain versus what today's development patterns are, and you'd be surprised how quickly we're kind of we're fragmenting these natural habitats. And so I want my kids, Leah and Kate, to be able to have a chance to see and enjoy nature, from bobcats to river otters and common terns, and not just squirrels and starlings that you can see anywhere. I mean, we have a real opportunity in Vermont to protect the biodiversity of Lake Champlain. And we owe it to that next generation to protect a landscape, you know, hopefully better shape than it's in now. So we have amazing wildlife on our preserves. If you visit every season, different times of the day, you will be amazed to see evidence of porcupines chewing on trees, or mink and weasels cutting through the snow banks. There are all sorts of opportunities to see this. If you join the Lake Champlain Land Trust and come on a hike with us, we will show you evidence of the nest from last year or spring wildflowers that you won't believe. And I think that's why we're protecting land, so that we can have these places to go to and wildlife habitat at the same time is protected. You know, off the trail is amazing wildlife habitat on all these natural areas. We can enjoy the view. We can enjoy going down to the lake. There is wildlife on the side that is not bothered by us and is very appreciative, I'm sure, that there's not bulldozers coming through and knocking down all the trees.
So you're not getting letters from the bobcat, but you're assuming. No, I'm just... No, but tell me about some of the successes. I know here in Shelburne, you've had some success stories, and I'd love to hear about them.
Shelburne residents are very excited about this one. There's only two known locations for the stonecat. Maybe we can do a whole show on the stonecat. A stonecat is this 3 to 5 inch long mad tom catfish that hides under the stones during the day and eats small insects at night. And it's found in the La Platte River in Shelburne above the waterfalls. So we have worked for 4 years and just closed on protecting the 65 acres on either side of the La Platte River. We're calling it the Upper La Platte River Natural Area. And it, in addition to the amazing river habitat for this rare fish, state endangered again, it also has a working sugar bush, a hemlock forest, some agricultural fields, and the opportunity to really show what happens when we restore an area. We're going to help replant the entire river valley and create an educational trail where folks can walk and enjoy, but also learn about water quality and buffering the rivers that affect the water quality of Lake Champlain.
Oh, interesting. So it's a 3 to 5 inch little catfish.
Yes, it's very, very nice.
I haven't heard of this catfish.
It's rare. It's a state endangered, so I wouldn't expect you to hear a lot about it. Like I said, it's found in only two locations and happens to be found at this spot where the Vermont Zen Center owns this private land. So we purchased a conservation easement and a public access easement to allow folks to walk trails and enjoy the wildlife there. At the same time, we knew we would restore the buffer along the river and protect this very rare and small catfish.
What's special about it?
It's an indicator species. If you have a lot of sedimentation, if you have a lot of erosion of the stream, the eggs for the mad tom, this mad tom catfish, the stone cat, will get covered, and the silt will actually not allow the eggs to hatch. So it needs a very clean stream. It needs a forested canopy, so those leaves are providing food for the macroinvertebrates that it then eats. So it's a very good ecosystem indicator, and even in this section, we're going to need to restore the stream more, but it's rare throughout Vermont because of not having populations all over and having trouble with silted streams.
Just to provide listeners with a few more fun facts about the stone cat, it's actually one of the smallest members of the catfish family. It's about 6 to 8 inches long, with a maximum length of about 12 inches long. And they're similar in appearance to mad toms, but they differ because they have this protruding upper jaw and also a slight notch in their tail. It's actually common in the Allegheny system and tributaries of Lake Erie, and you can also find it in Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence River system. And as you were saying, it's endangered here in Vermont. They're usually found under or among the rocks in swift water or streams, and also in sort of weedy water near shore in the mud of the mouth of streams. And what's interesting is they actually have these poison glands at the bases of their pectoral and dorsal fin spines. And if the spines prick your skin, it sort of feels similar to a wasp sting.
I don't know how common it is elsewhere. I just know it's state endangered in Vermont, and this is, the fish department was ecstatic that we saved one of the two habitats.
And then who is responsible then for restoring the stream and cleaning it up?
So Lake Champlain Land Trust has taken that on as part of the larger project. We closed on the real estate portion, but we're busy creating educational signs, and we're going to plant demonstration areas and restore the river valley through tree plantings and shrub plantings and kind of removing the invasive species. And we've made that our goal, to kind of make it a model river valley that people can visit, and then landowners from anywhere in the East Coast can come and see, what can I do to protect my upland forest that runs into this streamlet, that runs into the river, that then runs into the lake that I find near and dear? Because it's not just about lakeshore or riverfront habitat, it's for all habitats. All habitats can be very important to water quality, so we want to show that through our demonstration areas.
Will the community be involved in cleaning up?
Absolutely. We're hoping to have volunteer work days and have folks come down and help us both remove the invasive species but also plant the new trees and kind of get involved with this large project.
And then there's another one that's also focused a lot on recreation, correct me if I'm wrong, is Eagle Mountain in Milton, Vermont. Is that right?
I know. Eagle Mountain is one of my favorites. John and Peggy Hoyt donated that to us. And then we also then purchased a neighboring property and combined the two together and then donated it to the town of Milton. So it's a 226-acre wildlife preserve in the heart of Chittenden County, 20 minutes from downtown Burlington. Not only are there trails that wind through amazing spring wildflower displays up to the top of Eagle Mountain, for example, but there's also a very short trail that goes to an overlook, and you can look over the entire Lake Champlain Basin, the islands in the lake that we just talked about, and the Adirondacks and beyond. But there's evidence of wildlife all over that preserve. I've seen porcupine chew marks, snakes in the small fields off the side of the trail, and every type of wildflower you want to see.
When's a good time to go?
End of April, early May in Vermont, for your listeners from afar, is when our spring starts for spring wildflowers.
Oh, really?
It's kind of later than the rest. So if you're looking for spring wildflowers, late April, early May are excellent times to go to both Eagle Mountain Natural Area in Milton or the Cat Bay State Park in Colchester. Those are spectacular spring wildflowers, and we actually expect there's some really good displays at Upper La Platte River Natural Area in Shelburne we were just speaking of.
And then what do porcupine chew marks look like?
Oh, well, they scrape away the bark, and they tend to be in odd places because they'll come out when the snow's high and kind of walk across the top of the snow. And then pretty much they can almost girdle the tree depending on how hungry they are. So a little smaller tooth mark than a beaver.
But it's higher up because they're on top of the snow when they're doing it?
Yeah, that's when they're hungry.
Because I want to start looking in my own backyard about porcupine chew marks.
Well, what I find so amazing about Eagle Mountain, and of course, to monitor the property, we walk the land off the trails and kind of walk the boundaries and make sure it's being protected. So we found all sorts of interesting things on the sides, and walking through the fields one day, in the middle of the day, I spotted a porcupine just climb right up a poplar tree and right there. I mean, you're not going to see that wildlife at a lovely school soccer field. And if we want our children to really appreciate the variety of wildlife and appreciate all that Vermont and the Champlain Valley offers, we need these wild areas to go visit. We need places where you can see a pile of nutshells from something that's created a cache of winter food, or find an evidence of a fox going after a rodent in a field. We need places where we can show our kids what wildlife looks like, not just what sits in the school ground next to the soccer field.
So if people want to learn more, where can they go?
Well, we have free trail guides and maps on our website, lclt.org. And as I said earlier, we have these new nature snapshots. So we'll take a landscape-sized photo of an area that we've protected and then talk in detail about maybe 8 of the species you would see there. And you can go to our website, the Nature Snapshots, and find Rock Island, Georgia, and then click on the common tern species snapshot and learn all about common tern or the other species that are there.
So that would be good if someone wants, before somebody goes out on the trail, to check out the nature snapshot and learn what's there.
Absolutely. We would love to have wildlife spotters let us know what they saw on the trails. You know, write us an email and say, hey, I saw whatever, you know, weasel tracks. Here's a picture of them. That would be great to find out so we can keep our kind of ongoing collection of wildlife information here in the office. At lclt.org, they can get involved. They can find out more about these wildlife habitats, and we can save a lot more wildlife habitat if we can get everyone involved.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time to talk with me today, Chris.
I really appreciate it as well.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation about common terns and land conservation with Chris Boguette, Executive Director of the Lake Champlain Land Trust.
Edited transcripts of selected programs are available on my website, laurelnemi.com, and also on mongabay.com. That's mongabay.com. You can also find archived episodes of The Wildlife on iTunes, at my website, laurelnemi.com, and at laurelnemi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Wildlife can also be heard on the Animal Wise Radio Network, which is available nationally and internationally, and is broadcast to any mobile internet device via Live 365, a 24/7 radio network. Of course, if you have any comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnemi.com. The Wildlife is generously underwritten by the Lake Champlain Land Trust, a nonprofit organization permanently conserving the lands, lakeshore, critical wildlife habitats, and natural areas of Lake Champlain. More information is available online at lclt.org. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP in Burlington, Vermont.